Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
The House and Senate are back. That sucks. We'll talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about the next generation of women with Natalie Winters. She joins us. Dark money, local elections, all that and more coming up on I'm Ryan. Well, you know, we try to laugh every now and then. I try to laugh as much as humanly possible. After all, what else can we do with all this mess? But I do have some terrible news I must bring you tonight to open up the show. You ready for this? The House and the Senate are back in session. And look, there have been a million sayings, statements, quotes, however you want to put that, throughout history about this. But whenever these people are back in session, whenever the House of Representatives and the United States Senate, whenever they're meeting, your freedom, your prosperity, your way of life is under attack. You need to think about these people whenever they meet as now they're just standing over your bed with a knife in your hands while you go to sleep. That's what it's like when these people meet. So what is on tap here? What are they dealing with? Well, first and foremost, it's wild, really, really wild and maddening to see how the two different parties operate. And this is what I mean. It's wild to see the communists take power, use power, attack their enemies, reward their friends. But on the other side, the low-T GOP, it's wild to watch time after time after time their refusal to use power. We're better than that. Oh, we can't do that. Well, we've only got one half of one house. Oh, we can't do all an endless list of excuses. This isn't the hill to die on. Maybe if we had the Senate too, it's crazy to see how they operate. First and foremost, remember they impeached Donald Trump twice over nothing. I know there's a ton of propaganda out there. He was impeached over nothing. Nothing. And yet they impeached him. And the Senate had a trial twice. You know, Mayorkas has been impeached. Alejandro Mayorkas, DHS secretary, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, he has been impeached. And so obviously, there's going to be a trial in the Senate, right? There's going to be a trial. That'd be the right thing to do. After all, we did it. Aren't you guys going to do the right thing? No, they're not going to do the right thing. Everyone's already talking about it. Chuck Schumer's not going to have a trial. Why? Well, he's a communist. The communists would never attack their own. They would never risk their own power on behalf of what? The law? The Constitution? The country? These are things that don't ever enter the mind of the communists. Of course, they're not going to have a trial for Alejandro Mayorkas. I'll tell you what, I'll make you another deal. You ready for this? You ready? Mr. Producer, write this one down. I didn't even discuss this one with the wife. She's going to be angry. If there's an impeachment trial for Alejandro Mayorkas in the United States Senate, I'm going to shave in a Fu Manchu mustache right here on the show. And you're just going to have to stare at it for a week. If there's an impeachment trial, Fu Manchu mustache. Come into the I'm Right show right here on the first. Mark my words. They're never going to do that. That's something Republicans would do. Well, I mean, I guess we do have to have a trial, guys. I know it's the right thing to do. It says right here in the Constitution. After all, this is the suicide pact we have to go down with. It's the Constitution, guys. Bunch of dorks. Communists would never operate like that, ever. And that, of course, brings me to the House. Speaking of the way two different parties operate, speaking of Trump, you remember Trump and his two AGs? His first AG was Jeff Sessions. Okay, he's the AG appointed by Donald Trump. And like the first thing he does, he was in office for 5 minutes. The first thing he does is, you know, I'm not going to get involved in this Mueller investigation. It wouldn't be right. It would be wrong. We're better than that. I'm going to recuse myself in the Mueller investigation. And Donald Trump had the first 2 years of his presidency completely blown up and kneecapped with an investigation completely bogus and invented by the intelligence community and the Democrat Party because Jeff Sessions had to do the right thing. And then his next AG, Bill Barr, not only did he do nothing, I remember the press conference like it was yesterday. He got up at the podium and bragged that he didn't intend to do anything. I remember like it was yesterday. He got up and he said, well, I mean, obviously we're going to look into things, but we're certainly not going to do a political tit for tat. That's how Republican AGs operate. Democrat AGs, do you know what Merrick Garland has done in 3 years? He has essentially been the sword and shield of the Biden White House. They're kicking in the doors of pro-lifers. They're flat out killing guys. They've got the lady who had Joe Biden's daughter's diary. They've got her rung up on charges. They're going to send her to prison. Joe Biden's DOJ works exclusively on behalf of Joe Biden to protect his friends, to attack his enemies. And again, the way the two different parties operate, we know now, right now, Merrick Garland, he's been told, been given a subpoena. Hey, you need to hand over this information. What information are they looking for? Well, they want the video of Joe Biden's deposition with Robert Hur. Remember that special counsel that was looking into Joe Biden? And he had some really not flattering things to say about Joe Biden and his mental capacity. Well, Jim Jordan, James Comer, they're threatening to hold Merrick Garland in contempt. And of course, he should be held in contempt. But why would Merrick Garland even take such a step? Well, Merrick Garland is a communist. He works for communists. And Merrick Garland believes, as all communists do, in using power. And maybe you're sitting there saying, well, Jesse, I don't want to be like them. Jesse, I don't want to be like that. Okay, I understand that. I'm not telling you you should want to be like Merrick Garland. I'm not telling you you should want to be like the communists. But I am telling you this. Set aside nursery rhyme conservatism for a moment. I'm telling you this, and you really, really need to hear me here. If one side believes in using power everywhere they have it, whether it's a DA spot in New York City or the AG, whatever, wherever they hold power, they use it to gain more, to attack their enemies, to reward their friends. And the other side doesn't because it's not the right thing to do. You know that this side has no chance, right? None. It's already over. If the right doesn't come around to using power to defend your people, yourself, using power, yes, to attack your enemies. If the right does not come around to that, we already lost. It's over. It's over. And do keep in mind what losing means. Another thing on the table right now in the House of Representatives is the FISA authorization. You see, not only is the federal government turning all of its guns, turning all of its attention onto you, the federal government has spent years authorizing itself to hoover up all of your data, all of your information, to spy on you. You understand, no matter who you are, maybe you're sitting there saying, Jesse, I'm not important. Jesse, I'm just a normal person. You understand that there is a very real chance, pretty much 100% chance, that the government has your data. They've seen it. They've read your text messages, or at least the computer has at some point in time, your emails, your everything. Now, that was one thing. It was bad enough when we thought they were just attacking radical Islamic terror, right? We certainly don't want towers to come down again. But it's another thing entirely to sit back and consider that now they're building databases on things like people who buy guns and Bibles, people who question the vaccine. And yes, the GOP is getting ready to authorize this once again, working with Democrats. They're going to send your money to Ukraine. You're paying 40% more for groceries. They're going to send your money to Israel. They're going to send your money to Ukraine. They're going to continue spying on you. And all this is going to be done with the aid of the GOP. Wild how different the two parties are. Would the communists ever help the GOP do things like that against themselves? Not in a million years. GOP does, though. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Speaking of sending all your money overseas, Ukraine, Israel, doesn't matter. Everyone just, you have money and you have your money and you have money. You know inflation's bad. I'm not going to sit there and insult your intelligence. You know it because you live. Anyone who lives now purchases goods, services, gas, food. It doesn't matter. Everyone knows it's really bad. And they're not going to stop. Look, the House and Senate, they're meeting. And what's it all come down to? It's all about money now. Hey, we got to hand more money to them and hand more money to them. So what are you going to do? How are you going to protect yourself? That's what Oxford Gold Group really is. It's how you, normal person, can protect yourself. Let's deal with your retirement first. You have an IRA, 401k, you've worked hard for that, right? Your whole life you've been putting money away. You want to lose it all? Get some precious metals as part of that 401k, that part of that IRA. That way, when the bubble goes pop, you don't lose everything. Let Oxford Gold Group mail you physical gold or silver coins. Send you a sack of it, all right? Fully insured, anonymous. But get your own sack, all right? Call 833-995-GOLD and let Oxford Gold Group help you out. We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, for me, I think feminism is just about us all having like the same amount of rights. And
what rights do women
just
not have
in
that
general,
men have?
I mean, just... I mean...
Like, where do you think there's inequality in society between men and women?
Well, I just mean like
women in sports.
Because all the gender men are coming in. Fair
that
point
is
there.
A hot topic.
Well, just like I
what
mean,
do you
like,
mean?
Women in sports in general, I think,
because
get paid less because there's less viewers for.
Well, that's
women's
why they
sports.
Get paid less because well, there's less viewers.
Right, but we also okay.
I'm just saying my definition of it is really broad.
I agree with her.
And if someone didn't think...
Okay, wait, but back... So okay. No one can give an example of where women don't have the same rights as men, but that's why you think we should... Or that's why you wouldn't date a man who doesn't identify as a feminist, but you can't give one example of where women and men aren't equal, except for women getting paid less in sports.
I have a fascinating question that now... It just popped into my head. I'm going to ask Natalie about joining me now. Hero for going through that kind of misery, Natalie Winters, co-host of the wonderful War Room and founder of She's So Right. All right, Natalie, before we get to those women and feminism and all this stuff, it occurred to me as I was watching. I have two teenage sons, and I watch them, when they get with their friends, they get progressively dumber. And there's this old saying that young men, when they get together, that you have to take the lowest IQ in the group and then divide that by the number of boys in the group, and that's the collective IQ. They just get dumber. And when you add more boys, they get dumber and dumber and dumber, and the things they do will be dumber. Does that same thing apply to women? Are they really that dumb because there's a lot of them together?
I think so. As the woman expert right now, at least on this show, I would say I think it does kind of hold a lot of water. And I think when it comes to feminism and a lot of these kind of cultural ideologies that people hold, or at least purport to hold, when they don't actually know why they hold them. If you watch the kind of longer extended version of this discussion, they say, well, Natalie, the only reason that you're sort of making us look like idiots right now is because you're better educated on this topic because you work in media. And my background actually is nothing in the cultural stuff. It's in Chinese Communist Party infiltration. And I said to them, you know, that's not really a way for you to get out of any responsibility of being accountable for your own beliefs. And the fact that I'm better researched than you, implying that you actually haven't done any research, I think shows you that you hold a lot of these beliefs, not because you actually, to your core, to your morals and ethics, think they're true, but you've just kind of gone along with the mainstream viewpoints that society tells you to believe. So whether it's a dumbing down or just kind of conforming with, I think, how society wants you to be, I think there is sort of some lowest common denominator element of your critique that is very applicable in this situation.
Natalie, why the lack of curiosity? And I mean it like this. I obviously, there's many things I don't know anything about. In fact, most things. But if I held a strong stance on something and someone like you pressed me on it and I didn't have any depth of knowledge, I would want to go find some. I would be embarrassed if you pressed me on something that I was speaking about as if I was some authority and it turns out I was a moron. I would feel convicted. I got to go read something. Do you get that from them? I mean, I've watched several clips of this. It's been floating around online. You did wonderful, by the way. They just look so dumb. I'd be so self-conscious if I looked that dumb. Do you get the impression they're self-conscious?
You know, I don't even think they internalize it as being dumb. I think they have really never, my estimation is that they really have just never been exposed to a young woman like myself, to young women who watch your show, to other young women that you've had on this program who don't self-identify as feminists. And I think that that's sort of a cornerstone, right, of, I'll call it what it is, a lot of these cultish ideologies that are very pervasive on the left. Where these girls don't really even know that there is an alternative to not being a feminist. And you hit the nail on the head when you would think there would be some level of like, oh my goodness, I'm so uneducated. Here I am saying that I would refuse to date a feminist. Yet earlier in the conversation, they couldn't even define what a feminist is. And I think we love to throw around the word, you know, indoctrination and, oh, what they teach on these college campuses. But I think at the core of it, the crux of it, is really just a lack of critical thinking and thinking for oneself, right? Because then they haven't actually put these ideologies kind of through the ringer of evaluation and understanding why they actually hold them. So when they're sitting there with all their girlfriends, it's just a lot easier to say you're a feminist because, frankly, you could probably skate through life and never get any pushback as to why you're not a feminist. Whereas myself, someone who has never identified as that, since I was in ninth grade, you know, in high school, I was having teachers and administrators press me and say I was a sexist for not holding those beliefs. So I think it's sort of a survival of the ideological fittest.
Do you girls talk about abortion?
I think the girls who vote based off of it, which there's another clip, perhaps you'll play it, that the female vote is whipped up, I think oftentimes focused primarily on that issue. A lot of the girls on the panel agreed to that, but I made the point, you know, you say you're so well educated on abortion and feminism. I just showed you don't actually know anything. Isn't it kind of bizarre that you just said that's the primary issue that drives you to vote and select for candidates? Meanwhile, they also say that when Republicans are like, oh, abortion is just an issue that's being used to whip up the female vote, they also think that that's crazy and that's sexist and it's demeaning to women. It's anti-feminist, right? So I always kind of describe it as it's like picking up this trudge, this mess of seaweed in the ocean where all these ideologies are so interconnected and they create this kind of ecosystem where you can't press them on any aspect of it because it's sort of this feedback loop, right? Where if you try to engage with them on abortion, then you're a sexist. If you try to engage with them on feminism, you can't because you're pro-choice. And that's why I do shows like the Whatever podcast, because I think a lot of times it's, no offense, we love straight white men, but when straight white men are, you know, trying to punch down, frankly, on girls like these, they sort of have the easy caveat. They can write them off as, oh, well, you're a straight white guy, so you're internally sexist. But I think when they're forced to reckon with a girl who's their age, in some cases younger than them, it's sort of shattering to their worldview. And that was kind of my takeaway from that podcast, that they had truly never met someone like me. And not that I'm all that rare. I would say the majority of the country thinks like myself, but they're just not exposed to it because they want us to be scared and afraid of speaking out, because then you don't have, you know, moments and conversations like the one you just played.
Yeah, Lee, it is. You know what? I could spend an hour talking to you about this because I find it so fascinating, but we have to shift gears because you have other things to talk about today. Dr. Fauci, Rand Paul, COVID-19. Fauci lied. He lied a lot. Rand Paul's talking more about this recently. What did he lie about?
Well, I've always joked that the reason that Anthony Fauci is an expert in COVID-19 has nothing to do with public health or public safety or mask mandates or vaccine mandates. It's because, frankly, he is an expert in the origins of COVID-19 because he helped fund the research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology that basically helped birth COVID-19 and a myriad of other gain-of-function type experiments done at Chinese Communist Party and Chinese military-run laboratories. But the latest, I wouldn't necessarily say revelations, revelation rather, for people who watch your show and people who watch The War Room, but there's always a bit of a lag time between what we're talking about and when, you know, mainstream Republican senators will adopt it. But it's that several, over a dozen federal agencies knew of this proposal, knew the fact that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was receiving taxpayer funds from the United States government, particularly from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, but no one dared to speak up. But frankly, I think it's a lot more nefarious than that. It's not just that you see this sort of collaboration between the Chinese Communist Party and the American government, which I think is really a tale as old as time. But what I think is the most evil part of all of this is the lengths that they went to cover up and suppress people who dared to speak out about it, whether it was weaponizing, you know, federally funded researchers by the likes of Peter Daszak, of course, the president of the group that was conducting this research with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, or a myriad of other scientific voices that were being plastered on CNN, quoted in the Washington Post, quoted in the New York Times, day after day after day in the early days of COVID-19, to condemn shows like yours, to condemn shows like The War Room, to condemn fact-based reporting that COVID-19 was potentially a result of gain-of-function research that had stemmed from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and that it wasn't racist to say that it didn't result from, you know, some soup at a weird wet market in Wuhan. So I really think it shows you the coordination that has gone on. And frankly, Jesse, I would extrapolate this not just to the origins, right, of COVID-19, but on so many issues that they've gone out of their way to censor, whether it's the origins of COVID-19, COVID-19 vaccines, election integrity, you name it. There's this concerted effort coming from the federal government, from dozens of agencies, to silence the actual objective truth.
Yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday. We found out CIA analysts got paid to say the virus didn't come from a lab. Natalie, let me ask you something, just an opinion question. I know you're an investigative journalist and you gather facts and things like that, but since you're knee-deep involved in all this, did they release this thing on purpose? I don't think that we'll ever know. I don't know. I have my suspicions, but do you believe they may have released this thing on purpose?
Well, look, the Chinese Communist Party has engaged in unrestricted warfare for decades now, and they've always wanted to abstain from going kinetic, right, boots on the ground. Though, if you look at Chinese spy balloons, you look at what's going on in the South China Sea, you look at what's going on at our southern border, you could potentially make the point that their Cold War with us has already turned hot, and there are some aspects of it that are kinetic. But I think if you look at COVID-19 through that paradigm, right, through the lens of unrestricted warfare, it fits in quite nicely with a lot of the ways that the Chinese Communist Party has waged biological warfare on us. Just look at the case of fentanyl, of course, exacerbated by our porous and wide open southern border. But I think it's very fair to say when you look at how COVID-19 really played into their broader goals of, I would say, aiming for global hegemony. You know, the Belt and Road Initiative didn't really pan out. Their Made in China 2025 initiative wasn't really going too hot. We'll see how their 2030 kind of objectives and their strategic agendas fall out in that pace. I'm sure if President Trump wins re-election, it'll face a strong impediment as opposed to Joe Biden. But I think they needed something like COVID. If you look at the financial ramifications of it, the way that they were able to expand their power over the developing world and third world countries, it really gave them, I think, sort of a, I would say, expedited way to not just the reorientation of really the entire global world order, but to really assert themselves as sort of top dog, at least when it came to, you know, using masks and PPE and vaccines and whatnot as sort of bargaining chips with developing countries while simultaneously tanking the United States. And I would argue significantly impacting the election in 2020 to secure a, you know, Joe Biden being in office, which is significantly better for the Chinese Communist Party than Donald Trump.
Yeah, being as how he's done business with him for years. Natalie, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. Let's talk about dark money. There's a lot of it floating around. How does it work? Who are the funders? What are we looking at? It's hard to figure that out, right? It's such a tangled web. Let's dig into that web next before we get to that web. You know what's in here? Absolutely nothing. But you know why there used to be something in here? It used to be full of coffee. Why? Well, because blackout coffee is amazing. That's why. I start my day with 2 cups of blackout coffee, and now it has to, it requires a superhuman amount of discipline for me to not go 3 cups. I've tried to pare myself down to 2 cups, and I was successful at that, but blackout coffee is so freaking good. I want 3. I want 4. I want another one now. I want to go fill this back up. You want the best coffee you've ever had in your life? 20% off your first order. They'll mail it to your front door. blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. Go enjoy my favorite coffee in the world. blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained 1 or 2 just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions in just a second. I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Money. We don't like to talk about money in politics. In fact, we love to say childish things like, we need to get the money out of politics. You ever found yourself saying something like that? You ever talked to someone who did? It's a wonderful thought. It's wonderful to think that the sky might open up and rain Sour Patch Kids right now because I have a sugar craving, but let's exist here in the real world. Money matters a lot. And the truth is the commies are really, really, really good at creating organizations and dark money networks to fund their evil ways and to make sure you fund their evil ways. Joining me now, Scott Walter, author of the book, one you should really dig into if you want to know how ugly this stuff really can get and how nefarious it is behind the scenes. The book is called Arabella. Scott, How ugly is it behind the scenes while normal people are going to work and dropping the kids off at school?
It is very ugly, and you saw there were multiple faces on that cover. Most people think, oh, George Soros funds everything. The answer is the left has a lot of Soroses.
Yeah, they do have a lot of Soroses. Let's begin there. Why? Why are there so many filthy rich guys on the left willing to essentially throw money away? We can make about George Soros, although, as you pointed out, it's a bunch of different guys. They don't look for return on investment all the time. Sometimes they do, but sometimes it's just, hey, here's $10 billion for you and $20 billion for you. Go pee on an art painting somewhere.
You know, I admit this is one of the most fascinating questions, and I think the short answer is they like control. They don't just like money. They like power. Of course, you can have power, the money usually comes, right? So this is why they are never supporting things like, we want smaller government so the ordinary American can have a bigger role in, you know, defining his life. Oh, no. It's not even enough for the U.S. government to take power, right? We have to have some multinational government, or multinational institutions are really important. And it's always about more power to the elite, right?
Yeah, no, it is always about, it's funny how they always end up with more money and power for themselves. In your book, you talk about the Arabella Network. What is it?
Well, it's a little complicated. I'll give you the 20-second version, right? Think of a pyramid.
No. Please, no. Give me, explain it to us. Make us smarter.
Okay. Think of a pyramid. At the top of the pyramid, the apex, you have this for-profit company, Arabella Advisors, okay? It actually makes everything else happen, but it's usually hidden. In the middle of the pyramid, you have half a dozen nonprofits, both the 501c3, that's charities, legally speaking, and C4s, that's the more political nonprofits, like League of Conservation Voters, National Rifle Association, that kind of nonprofit. That's the middle of the pyramid. There are half a dozen of those. At the bottom of the pyramid, you have hundreds, over 500, in fact, little fake groups that are legally just projects of those nonprofits in the middle of the pyramid, right? But those hundreds of little groups are what you see as an American. You see, for instance, Fix the Court, which says, oh, the Supreme Court's got terrible ethics and we've got to, you know, do all kinds of things to mess with the court so it won't be unethical. That's just some guy in a Brooklyn apartment who's gotten a, you know, nice few fat grants from Arabella and other joints spouting off. He's not anything like the groundswell that, you know, a Senator Whitehouse wants you to think, or that the New York Times pretends he is when they write pompous editorials about the court.
Okay, how successful are they? Because some tubby guy in his apartment in Brooklyn putting up things on Facebook doesn't sound like it would be any kind of an effective political strategy. Is it working? Obviously, something's working. They keep doing it. They keep funding it.
Well, I'll finish up on the Fix the Court thing. He is cited repeatedly in the New York Times. Are you? He is cited and even testifies in front of Congress. Are you? So, and it doesn't cost, you know, in his case, it's a few hundred grand a year.
Golly. Okay, so you've testified about this in front of Congress. They're aware of the problem. They have to be. Six times you've testified in front of Congress. What are they doing about it? Is anyone trying to do something about this problem? Because this sounds really ugly for a country.
Well, one of the last times I testified, I was testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee, and I was explaining about foreign money in this Arabella network, because one of their biggest donors, and another Soros, and this one you almost certainly haven't heard of, is a Swiss foreign national called Hans-Jürg Wies. Now, he's given $250 million to Arabella. As best we can tell, he was like its original sugar daddy back in the aughts when it was first getting going. And then he continues to put tens of millions a year into the network. It is very scary that he is putting all this money indirectly into American politics. And the Ways and Means Committee was considering legislation, for instance, that would say, if you're a 501c4 political nonprofit that gets money from foreigners, you cannot turn around and hand money to super PACs. So that's one possible way to curb things.
Okay. Are there Republicans and Democrats on board with this kind of thing? Does it sound like the kind of thing Democrats would get on board with?
That's an excellent question. I mentioned I've talked about Arabella 6 times to 5 different committees in both houses. Now, would you care to guess how many questions from Democrats I've ever gotten at a congressional hearing?
Tell us.
0.
Yeah.
So,
that's what I would have guessed.
Not real interesting.
The book, go get it. Scott Walter, thank you so much. I appreciate it, my friend. Golly. All right. Speaking of blocking and tackling, it's more than just dark money networks. School board races. You talk about culture war stuff? Well, that's where it begins. Ryan Gerdusky joins us next to discuss those all-important races. Before we get to Ryan, let's get to you and your personal safety. You see, what does any of this stuff matter if an animal kills you, hurts you? And we have to acknowledge now that we have animals all around us. We do. We are creating more within our country with all the mental illness, drugs, and setting them loose from prison. We're importing more. What do you carry on you every day that will stop one of these people? When you're going to work, getting gas, out walking the dog, what do you carry on you? That's what Byrna is. Byrna is your ticket to get home safe that night. It's non-lethal, so even if you're not a gun person, I love guns, but even if you're not a gun person, use it. It's a pistol launcher. Shoots pepper balls or tear gas balls. It'll stop a bad man in his tracks, and you get to go home alive. I love these things. I think I own 5 of them by now. We have fun as a family just practicing with these. They have these little practice rounds in the backyard. It's right there. Go to Byrna.com/Jesse. That's BYRNA. Go get one. We'll be back.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained 1 or 2 just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your post said that their oppressors don't get to choose the form of resistance used against them. You didn't write that? That is true.
Well, then was what happened to Israel on October 7th justified?
Yes.
The rape of women at a music festival was justified.
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
You don't think there was any rape?
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
Okay. Were women murdered at the music festival?
They were.
Was that justified?
Yes.
The murder of innocent women just attending a music festival, that was justified in your opinion?
No. I think resistance against Israel is justified, yes.
Government schools, they are a peach, aren't they? Joining me now, my friend, someone who's actually trying to change them. You want to fight the culture war stuff. It's not done from the White House. It's done from the local level at the school boards. Ryan Gruduski, founder of 1776 Project PAC. Ryan, I would love that to be for that to be some one-off with some dirty commie teacher in Seattle, but sadly, that's not the case, is it, my friend?
No, it's, I mean, that's a pretty extreme case. I will give it credit where it's due. That's pretty extreme, but it's not the sole case. And if Seattle was a functioning city in any large capacity, they would fire a teacher like that. And the school board, the teachers union would be on board firing somebody like that. Unfortunately, that's not the case right now. But I mean, it is remarkable how the left always roots against civilization, against civilized society in all manners. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be literally Stone Age Native Americans who were cannibals in parts of North and South America. They will root for them over Westerners because it is inherent in them to always root for chaos, destruction, and the end of civilized society as we know it.
It's in them. You can't get it out of these daggone people. How deep is it in our education, Ryan, in our education system, I mean, and why? It's just amazing how much of the worst filth you see out there comes from school teachers or an administrator or a principal somewhere. It's awful.
Well, I mean, there's so for the case of most teachers are actually very good and try very hard and have to work within parameters set by them by either teaching consultants or through administrators, especially DEI administrators, who are always looking for, racism everywhere they can get it. And then there's also the state regulators. The problem essentially with the teachers that we're seeing is that the teachers' schools, the school that's a place, the teachers' university, are horrendous. For instance, in Illinois, University of Urbana in Illinois, there is a teaching professor named Rochelle Gutierrez. She teaches people how to be teachers. She's an award-winning teaching professor. She teaches how to decolonize math. And she's done it for 30 years. And now major school districts in our country, like the school district in Pittsburgh, are following her model to decolonize math. And she says the problem with math is if you're good at it, you're perceived to be smart. And that's a problem with society versus your humanity. It's all baloney and it's all, you know, I can't even use the words I want to say, but it's all baloney and it's garbage in and out. So that's really the one first big problem. And the second thing is that people perceive public education as essentially being free. I mean, it's public schools, but there's so much money to be made in public schools and in teaching and in the process of making money from public schools. According to Parents Defending Education, DEI, affiliates have made over $22 million in government contracts in the local level over the last few years. That is a boatload of money. And it's probably just the tip of the iceberg when you really get down to how much people are actually making in the process of selling DEI to superintendents, to school administrators, to principals. So that's where we see a lot of really the big garbage. There are always going to be problematic teachers here and there. They're in private schools as well. But a lot of the thing that's forcing good teachers either out of the profession or to teach this way comes from these administrators and these outside influences.
This is wild. These people are actually anti-math. I hope the Asian community is paying attention. All right, Ryan, school board races across the country. All is not lost. I try to explain this to people all the time, though, that we'll lose this Senate seat or this loser congressman gets reelected or even this November. You know, Trump loses to Biden if that were to happen or something like that. There are many, many, many races that are critically important, like school board races, and we are winning them, aren't we?
Yeah, so we just did elections in Wisconsin last week, and we won about 60%. And the Democratic Party put a lot of their effort in Waukesha School District. We ended up actually winning overwhelmingly. We actually swept that entire school district. We're waiting today to find out if we won the last two races, which was a write-in candidate. We feel pretty good about it. And if we win in there in La Crosse County, we will have been the first conservatives to win in La Crosse County basically since the 80s. So it's very popular, a lot of the issues. You know, what I always say to candidates, especially candidates running in left-wing or liberal areas, if we had no culture war issues at all, everything from the flag to books in school, would we have successful public schools? And the overwhelming answer is no. So find out why and run on that. We have elections coming up in the great state of Texas next month on, I think, believe May 4th, and then Florida goes on. All these states are having school board elections way before the presidential election. And then on the presidential election, there will be school board elections as well on either A, the bottom of the ballot, or more likely the other side of the ballot, where so often people don't even flip over to go vote. Making sure you vote from the bottom of the ballot up, starting with school boards and then going to president rather than just starting at president and walking away, is so essentially important. Making sure you sit there and make the whole entire ballot. You will be shocked by the thousands upon thousands of people in every single state and district in this country that will just skip a line and just be like, I'm too tired of keep filling those bubbles and I'm gonna go home.
Ryan, let's shift gears and talk about illegal immigration. I admit I am a jaded, cynical, grumpy old man. I know all this. I understand the American people are angry about illegal immigration. Everyone talks about it now. I also believe the American people have no appetite to actually solve this problem in a way that would be required to solve the problem. But am I wrong? Are people fed up with this foreign invasion?
People are definitely fed up with the invasion. People everywhere are fed up with it. And I went to the border recently and it was far worse. And I have been an immigration hawk my entire life. It is worse than you can even think, because there are no border security that says people stop coming in. I mean, their job of the border agents is to bring people in. Our government under Joe Biden is basically a giant Uber service to bring people from around the world in. And if you think it's bad with 8 million, wait till 100 million come. They will bankrupt every major American city in this country at the rate that Joe Biden is going. The good thing about what can be done to tackle the situation is people imagine like it's an Elio Gonzalez situation of people running with guns and kidnapping children to deport them. And we saw in Arizona when SB 1070 was passed, the amount of illegals who self-deported if their laws were actually enforced. And I think that that's the language we need to use. Just enforce the law on the books. And people, if it gets hard, will go home. That's really it. They will go home. And, you know, it's really, I've not been the biggest Trump supporter in the world, but it is so essential that he wins the presidency to stop Joe Biden.
What's wrong with arresting people and throwing them in the back of cars, too? I mean, I'm on board with that program. I just don't feel like the rest of Americans would be. We can take that family of 10 and load them all up in the paddy wagon and right back to Guatemala for you. I don't think the American people would support it, but that's what I support.
I mean, you can do that, but there's... I always say go with the path of least resistance. And if you just enforce the laws on the books, the good thing is about this invasion, the invasion and how large it's been, is that so many blue states are feeling it in a way they have never felt it before. You know, Massachusetts is cutting firefighter funding. Denver is cutting funding for the police. New York is going to cut funding for sanitation. They're all feeling the crisis. So there's not appetite in major blue cities for millions of more migrants, because it's going to break each and every municipality that they welcome them in. That's the good thing, is this red pilling of blue cities and people actually feeling it. Now they have to sit there and enforce them across the whole country. And you can do it by your way, but you could also do it by making them self-deport.
Well, I'm fine either way. Just you got to go. Do you think those people in these blue areas who are out there whining about, I'm a rec center, do you think they're actually going to change how they vote? Or is it just going to be yet another, I voted for Joe Biden, I can't figure out why my neighborhood sucks kind of a thing?
So I think some people are. I think that a lot of people aren't putting two and two together. It depends on how bad the crisis gets for them. I mean, at the end of the day, you're seeing people who are loyal Democrats You know, everyone from elderly Black people in Chicago to Asians and Latinos in New York, sitting there and saying, this is getting too bad. We have to sit there and do something about it. You have to stop the crisis. And once they know that the gravy train is cut off and the money train is cut off, and they're going to either have to cut services to their city, or they're going to have to sit there and maybe declare bankruptcy, something will seriously have to happen to change the laws. What Congress should be doing in the meantime is they should be passing, there's a piece of legislation, I should know off the top of my head, but I don't know the name of it. I think it's called the Justice for Victims of Sanctuary Cities Act, which would allow individuals who have been hurt by sanctuary cities to sue the municipalities for allowing criminal aliens to get through those municipalities without evading ICE. This would bankrupt sanctuary cities from the bottom up rather than the goal of defunding sanctuary cities out of Congress, which is never going to happen because Congress is never going to defund, you know, national security in New York or whatever. But allowing people to sue over that issue would be extraordinarily important.
Yes, it would. Ryan, I could go on and on, but I'm out of time, and I know you are too. Thank you, my brother. All right. Lighten the mood. You ready for that? Next.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions in just a second. I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We love our dogs as we get ready to lighten the mood. We love our dogs, do we not? I'm embarrassed how much I love my dog. I didn't even want a dog. I was enjoying not having a dog. I'd had dogs most of my life, but the boys were all, I want a dog, I want a dog, I want a dog. And finally I caved and we got a dog and now we have Fred. And now that big fluffy idiot is just part of the family. He is. And would I fight a kangaroo for my dog? Probably. See you tomorrow.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.